frustrated and glad. She didn't want to hurt him, but she didn't want to die either. The Skyer and Claws were coming fast, and Siv suspected that soon they'd be close enough to call one another by name and see the light leave the eyes of friends as they died far from their home territory, swarmed by beetles and crusted with gray sand. The first warrior crashed into Phasma's metal shield, a claw swinging a big axe, aiming for Phasma's body behind the metal plate. Phasma put a foot against the metal and kicked him over, dispatching him with an impersonal blaster bolt to the chest. If not for her imposing height and the flash of Aratu cloth between the joints of her armor, she could have easily been one of Brendel's faceless, nameless troopers. Siv didn't have long to ponder her leader's transformation. The wave of warriors struck, and she was too busy hacking with her scythe and shooting with her blaster to consider philosophy. The blaster wasn't as strong or trustworthy as the ones Phasma and the troopers wielded, but Siv was grateful for the ability to fight at two ranges and to end a foe without having to pull a blade out of sticky flesh. She took down two claws with the blaster, but it clicked and failed to shoot the third body in the line. Screaming her own war cry, taken over fully by the bloodlust of war, Siv rose from behind the shield and lashed out with one of her blades, a weapon that never failed. It bit into a woman's neck, half-cleaving it from her shoulder. The woman's surprised eyes met Siv's, and Siv realized it was Ilva, the mother of Frey. She pulled out the blade, horrified, and looked around for the treasured little girl, but all she saw were yet more warriors out for her blood. Ilva sputtered on the ground and began screaming as the golden beetles surged up from the sand, swarming over her and feasting on the blood. There was nothing for it. Such wounds would not heal. Siv's only gift was mercy. She slashed Ilva across the throat and moved on to the next attacker. No time to use the detraxers or say the prayer for Ilva. No time even to clean the blood from her scythe. She caught glimpses between attacks of her fellow fighters, her former family. Torben wrestled with his own brother, born much smaller and less inclined to brutality, and it was clear that Torben didn't want to be the one responsible for his older brother's death. They wrestled with bare hands, their weapons long ago fallen to the sand, and although Torben could have ended the fight in 10 different ways, snapping his brother's neck or spine or bashing his nose up into his brain, he just kept growling at the man, holding him in something that might have been a hug if they hadn't been muttering ferociously at each other about loyalty, surrounded by the dead and dying. Between assaults, Siv watched her side struggle, what few of them there were. One of the troopers was dead, and Brendel was industriously hunched behind the shield, putting on the man's armor. The other trooper had a blaster in each hand and was methodically shooting everyone in his path. A trail of bodies slid down the dune, full of blaster holes and gently smoking, some still crawling or moaning. This was not how fights went in the Skyre, not how Baldur's Band had faced off with Phasma's warriors. There had been an element of courage and respect in their skirmishes, the bands testing each other, wetting their skills against their opposition like a blade to a stone. But this? It was slaughter, and it turned Siv's stomach. There was no honor in this fight. As for Phasma, she had abandoned her shield and entered her pure element, war. She danced from attacker to attacker, evading every sword stroke and axe hit. There was an elemental elegance to her every move, to the cold precision with which she dispatched every warrior who approached her with malice. Watching her, Siv could see the path she forged, and it led straight to Keldo. Unable to fight thanks to his missing leg, he waited behind his shield, his mask hiding his true face and two discarded blasters on the sand by his sled. Tiny fingers curled around his shield suggested that the child, Frey, hid behind it with him. That was the moment when Siv realized that even if Phasma was wrong, Keldo wasn't right either. A good leader would have accepted the loss of his greatest warriors and worked to shore up his territory. He would have armed the next line of defense, secured food and shelter for those who remained, and focused on maintaining his relationship with the nearest band, likewise recently weakened. Instead, Keldo had abandoned his generational home, the territory for which they had fought so long and given up so much, and brought all his people here across the wastelands to die on a hopeless journey of revenge. A soft cry drew Siv's attention, and she watched Torben fall. The big man landed on his knees, then gently slumped sideways onto the sand, blood gushing from a gash in his side and his mask slipping from his face. His brother stood over him, staring down at the blade in his hand in mute horror. It was, to Siv's knowledge, his first kill. Siv wanted to run to Torben, to comfort him, to hold him, to give him the proper prayers, but she knew well enough when a wound was fatal. Nothing she could do would save him. His eyes were already open to the blue sky, empty, the beetles swarming up in a golden river to suck on the gaping wound. Torben's brother looked up at her, his eyes pleading for something. Forgiveness, maybe, or understanding, or that he might somehow wake from this nightmare. He was not a warrior and had never earned his mask, which meant that his tears were there for all to see. Siv could not give him what he sought. She picked up the dead stormtrooper's blaster rifle and shot Torben's brother. Torben's murderer. One lone bolt carefully placed to guarantee its lethality. A small smile lit his face before he fell, and she thought she saw his lips form the words, "Thank you." Siv looked around for her next fight and found that there was no one left. Torben was gone, and both of Brendel's troopers were on the ground, one half stripped of his armor. The only people still standing were Brendel Hux, cowering behind his shield, partially stuffed into armor that didn't fit, and Phasma, standing in a circle of bodies that were swirled in red blood and gold beetles. And far off, Keldo on his sled. Bodies lay everywhere. Considering most of them were old or had never been warriors, it felt less like a victory and more like a slaughter of fools. Dropping the shield, Siv gave Keldo a hard look, picked her way across the battlefield, and knelt by Torben's body on the opposite side of the beetle flood. Taking her detraxer from her bag, she attached a new skin and slipped the spike into place. As the machine hummed to life and did its work, depriving the beetles of their goal, she gently pulled the mask from Torben's head and snapped it in half over one knee. His skin was redder now, starting to peel, and his lips were so dry that they were shredded. His unseeing eyes glared up at the sun, asking a question that would never be answered. "Thank you for serving us, Torben," she said, tears threatening. "Your today protects my people's tomorrow. Body to body, dust to dust." His brother lay nearby, and she put the other detraxer to work, reciting the same prayer. Even if Brendel's people managed to save them in time, before the sickness truly took hold, and even if such unsophisticated medicines had no use in ships among the stars, this was Siv's task. This was how she helped her family. This was who she was. This was how she would do honor to her people. But the fight wasn't actually over. Phasma had her own responsibilities. She and Keldo stared at each other over the field of battle. He'd taken off his fierce mask as if he could simply set violence aside. Although Phasma wore a helmet and her brother's burned red face was bare, Siv knew well that neither one blinked. It seemed to be a battle of wills at first, but it was clear that Keldo couldn't move. He had a sled with no one to pull it and only one leg, although he wore the prosthetic made from the droid and sat tall with tiny Frey in his lap. An orphaned child, and a field of sand and corpses formed an impossible divide between Keldo and his sister. When Phasma lowered her blaster and strode across the bloody field to him, it was in no way an act of subservience. It was a statement. "I walk because you will not, because you cannot." And Keldo knew it. His face went even redder as she took powerful, deliberate strides toward him. Still, she didn't remove her helmet, but she didn't have to. She was the tallest woman Siv had ever seen, and even if that didn't make Phasma's presence clear, her fighting prowess did. It felt like an eternity, The proud warrior in singed and dirty armor approaching the helpless man trapped alone in the desert. Brendel finally stood and straightened, quietly disentangling himself from the poorly fitting armor and brushing down his black uniform as if to acknowledge that something of import was occurring. He followed in Phasma's path, blaster in hand. But where she strode like a colossus, he picked and hopped over the bodies, as if disgusted by the very real carnage of the war his presence had wrought. Siv heard the telltale sound of a detraxer with no more work to do, and looked to Torben. His huge body, once her shelter and her comfort, had been reduced to a sad and sunken husk. The beetles had fled, no more sustenance to draw them near. Recognizing her calling, she switched out skins and looked for the next body, but they were all swarming with beetles. She could only sit back on her heels and watch Phasma as she crossed an uncrossable gulf, with Brendel, an almost comical figure, trailing in her wake.
"Phasma," Keldo asked, "take off the helmet and speak to me."
Phasma shook her head.
"While you sit behind two shields? No. Warriors earn their masks, and I have obtained a superior one."
Keldo frowned in distaste.
"What have you become, Phasma? That's not your voice. Those aren't your words. That's not your mask. You've destroyed everything we worked for."
The next step Phasma took carried a new threat, and Keldo sensed it and flinched.
"Wrong, Keldo. You destroyed it. We had one chance. One chance to leave this dying shell for a life of something better. And instead of grasping for that greatness, you doomed your people."
"I didn't kill these people, Phasma. You did that."
"You delivered them to their doom."
Brendel took a step closer, his hands behind his back and his posture erect and formal.
"Phasma, we must call the First Order. Time is wasting. The sickness will soon take hold."
His clipped, brutal words carried on the still air.
"You know what has to happen now."
Kneeling in the sand, every breath tearing from her dry throat, her eyes burning and her skin peeling, Siv watched the scene unfold as if it were a dream. Keldo put his hands up, pleading.
"Phasma, don't do this. Don't be this."
"I know what I am, Keldo. I always have. That's the difference between us. I am willing to finish what I've begun."
Phasma took a step toward Keldo, pulled out her blaster, and shot him in the chest. Keldo's eyes jerked wide and his body went limp, slumping sideways out of the sled. A tiny, ragged cry ripped out of Frey, still hiding behind the shield. Phasma aimed her blaster.
"No!"
Siv screamed. Phasma's head whipped around as if she'd forgotten that Siv existed, much less that she'd survived the battle. But Phasma's blaster didn't waver. Her helmet turned to look at Brendel as if in question.
"The First Order can always use strong children," he said, "if she can survive the sickness."
Phasma nodded once.
"Siv!"
she called. That's all it took to break the spell. Siv forgot the detraxers, her feet pounding across the sand to pluck the child from the sled and hold her tightly, the last remaining member of her family.
"Siv? What happened?"
Frey asked.
"Where's Mama?"
"Hush, love," Siv whispered into the child's wild brown hair. "We're going to take a ride to the stars." '28. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. Time went strange after that. As the madness of battle ebbed, the sickness took hold. Siv had been feverish once as a child, alternating hot and cold as her bones seemed to burn and her head throbbed in time with the ocean. This sickness was like that, plus peeling red skin, boils, and a feeling like her body was swelling, her skin stretching beyond capacity. Frey had it too, and Siv covered her face in salve and gave her a water skin to suck on, hoping the extra liquid and nutrients would help the girl fight it off. Back at the crash site, Phasma easily rappelled up to the cockpit. Although it took some time, she was able to haul Brendel up onto the nose of the ship. Together, they bashed in the remaining glass, shoved out the dead pilots, and set to work on whatever sort of technological magic Brendel used to send his call for help out into space.
What happened?
Frey kept asking. Siv wasn't sure herself. A simple disagreement had resulted in an insane journey and an even more unbelievable genocide. How could she tell the child that everyone she'd ever known was dead because Phasma and Keldo had failed as leaders? She couldn't. Especially not within hearing distance of the only two people who could save her life. All she could do was what her mother had done. Teach the child how to carry on. She explained the detraxers, showed Frey how to change the water skins, and had her repeat the prayer with each new body, for all that the beetles had already claimed most of their liquids. Frey didn't seem particularly interested, but then again, the little girl had to be in shock and growing sicker by the minute. Siv's movements were becoming slow, her sight blurry. She looked up to the sky, hoping to see a ship appear there and wonder what it would look like. Would it shine with all the might of the sun? Or would it block out the sun, as big as one of the Khonstar stations? When it did finally appear, it was nothing like what she'd expected. Brendel's ship resembled the falling star they'd seen, bright and silver and glowing. But the First Order ship that came to save them was black and sharp, cutting through the sky like one of the sharks they'd feared in the wild, cold waves of the Skyre. It hung there in the blue for a few long, dreamy moments before disgorging a smaller, blocky ship which sped directly toward them and landed on a blank stretch of gray sand. A hatch opened in a hiss of steam, and two lines of stormtroopers marched out in step, their armor perfectly fitting and painfully shiny.
"What is that?"
Frey asked. "Our salvation," Siv said, smiling. Phasma and Brendel rappelled down from his ship and walked toward the troopers. Brendel was in front, Phasma taking her position behind him, her blaster rifle held in both hands to mimic the other troopers. Between the two lines of white soldiers marched a young man about the same age as Siv and Phasma, a younger and thinner version of Brendel. The man's black uniform was spotless and crisp, his red hair carefully combed.
"The First Order is pleased that you survived, Father," he said with Brendel's clipped accent.
"I owe my good fortune to Phasma. Phasma, this is my son, Armitage."
Phasma inclined her head, but said nothing. Armitage looked her up and down, barely concealing his skepticism.
"The First Order thanks you, Phasma," the young man said, clearly trying to impress his father.
"She will be joining us on the finalizer, as will this child. Come now."
Brendel turned and held out his hand, and Siv clutched Frey close to her, realizing that no one had yet spoken of Siv's own contribution or her fate.
"Release her,"
Phasma said, and Siv's hands unclenched from Frey's shoulders.
"Come, Frey."
Frey looked to Siv, her eyes fever bright and full of fear.
"It's just Phasma," Siv said weakly. "Go to her."
Phasma held her blaster in one hand and offered her glove to Frey, who gave Siv a last troubled glance before running to take the outstretched hand. Siv stood, dizzy, and took a few faltering steps toward the others, careful to step around the bodies.
"And what of that one?"
Armitage said, looking at Siv with distaste.
"She's too far gone,"
Brendel said,
"and too soft for our needs."
Siv's heart dropped.
"Phasma?"
she implored. Phasma's helmet turned to her, giving no hint as to what Phasma might be feeling.
"When I ordered you to kill Randorus, what did you do?"
Siv blinked against the sun, her world gone blurry.
"I did what I thought was right. I showed him mercy."
"You defied a direct order, and that will not be tolerated."
Brendel smiled and nodded.
"You'll do well in the First Order, Phasma."
Armitage inclined his head.
"Shall we, then? The Supreme Leader has much to discuss with you, Father.
All this time, the troopers had remained as still as stone. At Brendel's signal, they turned and filed back up the ramp and onto their ship, Brendel and Armitage walking side by side between their neat columns. After a brief pause, Phasma followed, holding Frey's hand.
Phasma?
Siv asked again, pleading this time, her world shattering as the last living person of her band turned to walk away. Phasma stopped and looked over her shoulder.
There's another station just over the next dune. It has mostly escaped destruction. Brendel says it may be stocked with medical supplies.
She continued walking. The last thing she said was,
He's right. You're too soft.
Without another word, without an apology, Phasma and Frey walked up the ramp and into the ship. Once everyone was on board, the ramp went back up, spilling gray sand. The ship took off in a gust of steam and noise, sending the sand swirling into great clouds that made Siv choke and squint. When she was able to see again, the only evidence that the First Order had visited Parnassus were tracks in the sand, an abandoned shipwreck, and the bodies of everyone she'd ever loved. As the bigger ship devoured the smaller one and disappeared, Siv's legs gave out and she fell to the sand. It felt soft at first, warm and calmly accepting. But then it began to burn, to itch. Siv was feverish. Her lips blistered and her eyes full of grit, though she couldn't tell if it was real sand or part of the sickness. But whether it was a dream or not, Phasma had given her a sliver of hope even as she broke her heart, and Siv was going to take it. She crawled from body to body, collecting everything she could find. Water, food, weapons, cloaks. She put on Pete's helmet and looked around in awe at a whole new world. It seemed to help block the sickness, or at least the blinding harshness of the sun, and she knelt to say one last goodbye to Torben. As she slumped there, sand burying her knees, she almost gave up. But then that persistent flip in her belly urged her to wobble to her feet and shuffle through the sand, dragging her collected bags over the next dune and toward the structure on the other side of the giant cylinders that Brendel had called a nuclear reactor. The white walls of the building showed marks of a blast, but were otherwise whole. The door slid open as easily as the doors on the other Constar Mining Corporation stations. For all its faults, Constar could build a hell of a door. The sand cascaded into the hallway sideways, and Siv tumbled in with it. She knew enough to press the button to close the door behind her, and moments later the building rocked, knocking her to the ground. When the world went still again, she pulled herself to standing, confused, but determined to keep on. She was familiar by now with the smooth white floors, with the orientation room, with the cafeteria full of food she was too nauseated to eat. She dropped her bags and put a hand to the wall, following the violet line to the medbay, a trick she vaguely recalled from Brendel's recovery at Terpsichore Station. Once there, she realized that she couldn't read any of the words or symbols on anything. But she did understand pictures, and a very handy drawing of a person putting their arm into a machine suggested that putting her arm into that machine might be useful. As if it had not been abandoned for over a century, the machine chirped to life and bleated repeatedly as a red light flashed. Soon, droids poured out of all the doors in the room, and Siv's first reaction was to panic. If these droids were as mad as the last batch, she was doomed. The first droid that reached her told her quite calmly that she had radiation sickness and would require several rounds of treatment. It led her to a bed and urged her to lie down, and she was grateful it said nothing about praise to the creators. The last thing she saw was a cheerful silver face, promising her that the Constar Mining Corporation valued her health, and then she felt a needle prick her skin. She fell asleep and was in and out of dreams for an indeterminate amount of time. Sometimes her gummy eyes would blink open on a smooth white ceiling.
Other times, she would see a droid standing over her with various instruments that would have been terrifying if she hadn't been, as she later learned, heavily sedated and strapped down. Siv didn't remember everything that happened to her in the following week, but the droids took excellent care of her. Fluids and nutrients and the very medicines that Brendel had promised dripped right into her sleeping body, and for a while she was able to forget the horrors of her last days with Phasma and Brendel. When she finally woke up, the droids were anxious to provide her with whatever she needed, and there was no mention of employment or remuneration. She was able to clean herself and slowly regain her strength and appetite. One day, they took her to a special room and showed her an image of her child moving on a big black screen, the baby's tiny frog fingers seeming to wave as Siv broke out into long, unshed tears of sadness mingled with newfound joy. The baby was healthy, the droid said. There would be no damage from the radiation. She would be born 5 months later. Siv named her Torby. When I visited them last week, Torby was a strong child, and Siv had found her peace living at Calliope Station. I told her I would send someone back for them. I hope I can keep that promise. On the Absolution. Vi looks up, heaves a sigh, and smiles as if she's finally free of a heavy weight. Cardinal has never wanted to shock her as much as he does right now, but he wants her to remain relaxed. Perhaps now that she's told this story and thinks she's safe, he can dig deeper or trip her up somehow. Still, he's angry. Because there's nothing in the story he can use, and she promised there would be.
And that's it, he says. That's the end?
Well, to be fair, the story isn't over yet. You and I are still here, and Siv and Torby are waiting on Parnassos. We could change that, you know. He glances up at Iris, glad he had her disable the cams. Interrogation is one thing, but discussing defection is another, even if he's only tolerating the spy's screed to keep her talking.
But you promised me intel that could take down Phasma and information surrounding Brendel's death. This was Siv's story, and I don't care about Siv. She has no idea what happened to Phasma after they left the planet. Anything else is conjecture.
Vi jerks her chin at the water, and he helps her drink.
Thanks, she says.
Thing is, a good spy doesn't need conjecture because there are other ways to follow a story. If, for example, someone on my side was able to hack into a stolen troop transporter and access the cam feed from the day Phasma left Parnassos.
At that, he perks up and leans in.
That wouldn't tell you everything.
Not everything, but plenty. Audio, visual, and body language can tell a good story.
Cardinal is concerned that the Resistance can steal and hack First Order ships so easily. Do his superiors know about that? If so, they've kept such mistakes hidden from Cardinal, even though he's a captain and should know when his transporters disappear. But for now, he's more interested in taking down Phasma.
Then tell it, he says.
30. On a First Order shuttle, 10 years ago. As the ship shifted under Phasma's boots, there was no way to tell what went through her mind. But the video showed Frey squealing and pulling her hand away from Phasma's glove, so chances are she felt some anxiety as she began her first trip into the stars.
Ow! Why are you squeezing so hard? What's happening?
The child asked. Phasma looked down at Frey for a long time. I imagine her seeing glimmers of Ilva, or perhaps of Keldo's eyes, which the child shared. Perhaps she didn't know how to answer, or perhaps she was still lost in the tragedy she had just witnessed. In any case, she didn't answer, and Armitage stepped in.
We're going up into space, he said, to become good soldiers for the First Order. I was once very little and took a ride on a ship like this, and now look how big I am.
He smiled at the child, then shot a measuring look at Phasma, as if trying to guess whether she might be friend or foe. She looked strange, to be sure, with poorly fitting armor over ripped, bulky cloth. Not very First Order at all. But even then, one imagines Armitage was always looking for ways to impress or destroy his own father. The look he shot at Brendel was pure loathing.
"Phasma, I wish for you to see this,"
Brendel said from where he stood by a great glass window, looking out into the sky. He murmured instructions to the pilot, who dutifully turned the transport ship around to face Parnassus. "When I was floating over Parnassus, I was struck by its beauty. The ocean was a surging swirl of dark green and deep blue. The land, a sea of gray, interrupted only by the black of rocks and the smudges that represented stations. That green one was Aratu. The white one marked their final battle. Somewhere, hidden under sand, was Terpsichore. I've been to many planets, and even I found it quite a view. I imagine for Phasma it was the most enchanting, fascinating thing she'd ever seen. She looked out the window for a long time, anyway. If she looked to the far left, across the ocean, she might have seen another landmass, this one brown and bright green and healthy-looking as compared with the place Phasma had come from. Her home, the Skyre and the Clawlands and everything around them except for that bright spot of Aratu, looked like a boil of rot, like dead bones waiting to be buried. Gray and black, all of it. And as she looked down on it, perhaps she realized it was possible to both love and hate a thing in equal measure.
"It's beautiful from up here,"
she said in any case. Brendel stepped closer to the bank of instruments.
"That's not what I want you to see. Now watch carefully."
Whatever his fingers did, the movements meant nothing to Phasma. At least not until bright lights bloomed from under the ship, shooting out with a heavy boom and zooming right toward her planet. Her hand jumped from where it lay by her side to Frey's shoulder, but she didn't call out or even give voice to a moan of pain as she realized what Brendel was forcing her to witness. She didn't have names for what these weapons were, blaster bolts so big they could rain down from space, but she must have known instantly what they would do. The first bolt slammed into the Skyre, and she watched the colors change, the black cliffs disappearing into the sea and great white plumes shooting up. The next bolt hit Aratu, leaving a black smudge across the gray sand where vibrant green had once been. Before he initiated the next volley, Brendel looked back to Phasma.
"Do you see now the power of the First Order? What we do to those who oppose us? Even those who inconvenience us."
In response, Phasma only nodded. I wonder if her helmet hid tears. She silently stepped in front of Frey, blocking the child's view as the final bolt arced down to where they'd just been, to where their entire family had fallen. She was too far away to tell if it had hit the buildings or Brendel's crashed ship, but it was clear Brendel was sending her a message that couldn't be misunderstood. Do what he wanted, or find herself destroyed.
"Powerful indeed,"
she said, when she was able. 31. On the Absolution. Vi watches Cardinal to gauge his reaction. She's maybe embroidered what Siv told her just a little, but that's the storyteller's gift, isn't it? To take a seed and spin it into a flower of untold beauty glistening with dew? Cardinal did say he wanted to know everything, and she gave him everything. She needed to buy herself some time, and she's done that. And she never lied. Everything she said was true. Mostly. And since she has an eidetic memory, she knows exactly which parts she embellished. It's worked, though. Time has passed. She's gotten a little stronger, and as for Cardinal, he's trying to hide that the story has affected him. "I know this is a lot to take in," Vi says, her voice even and calm and low.
"Do you really think she's still capable of tears?"
he asks. "I'd like to think she's still human under that armor, or that at least she was then. The hollow shows her shaking as she watched Brendel ravage her planet." Cardinal looks off into space and smiles. I remember the child. Showed up in the youth barracks a few days later, still pink from the radiation, although the med bay cleared her. She did well. UV-8855. They called her War Cry because she couldn't stop herself from shouting during every fight. The little ones and their nicknames. When she was old enough, I graduated her. A year ago, just about. I passed her directly into Phasma's hands. I wonder if they recognized each other. He's so still that Vi knows he's working through some deep feelings. She doesn't want to lose him, though. She needs to keep steering him, steering the story. The less he thinks about the remote and about Baako, the better. Her name is still Phasma, and she's still the tallest person around. Kind of hard to miss. But you can't feel bad about it. Frey was just another kid who would have died on a crap planet anyway. For the first time, Cardinal's head falls forward into his hands, his hair sweaty and mussed. He's been running his fingers through it again and again, making it stand up in whorls. He looks, well, more broken than stormtroopers are supposed to be. Why would Brendel order such a senseless massacre? The First Order's purpose is to bring stability and peace to the galaxy. I've been on missions and I've followed orders, but the people of Parnassus weren't in rebellion. They weren't even given a chance to cooperate. Vi shakes her head sadly. Sorry, but you're the only one here who's not playing dirty. The First Order goes to planets and they steal children and they subsume resources. I guess that way up here you can't see what's going on down below. Do you ever leave this bucket? Take an R&R on some quiet moon with umbrellas in the drinks? Of course not. Not since Brendel died. My duty is here. I train the children. And now you know who you're training them for. Cardinal stands and paces. General Hux was my mentor, my superior. Yeah, well, much like everyone else in this story, Brendel Hux was a liar. Without being asked, Cardinal brings her water, helps her drink it. His hands are shaking, she notes. He can't quite meet her eyes just now. Whether he can't handle her truth or he's planning his next move, she doesn't know. She still hasn't given him what he needs. For a strong and steady man, a man who's nearly had the emotions programmed out of him, he carries himself gently. As a spy, Vi has delivered a lot of intel to a lot of people, and it just takes them this way sometimes. As if they wish they could curl into themselves and deny something they always suspected deep down. Something they now know is true, but they aren't quite ready to face. How do you know all this? He asks, voice rough. How do you know Brendel is dead? That's one of the most closely guarded secrets in the First Order. Outside of this ship, official word is that he's on a long-term mission. But you know he's dead. And not just because Armitage told you and 10,000 of your friends. Cardinal snorts like she's a fool. I was his personal guard. He hand-picked me on Jakku, trained me himself. I was infinitely loyal. From the time I first put on this armor, he trusted me to keep him safe. He holds up his arm, displaying the flawless red. He designed it himself because he said red was a color of power. Every moment he spent in my company, he knew he was safe. But what about when he left your company? Vi presses. Did he say nothing about his time on Parnassus? Vi is genuinely curious, and the interrogation is starting to feel more like two people of like minds colluding. Almost nothing. When they arrived, Brendel looked half dead and Phasma ridiculous, in poorly fitting armor, badly stained and blasted and hung all over with primitive weapons. It was just the two of them, and the child, but she needed longer in the med bay, so I didn't meet her until later. None of Brendel's troopers survived. They were my friends, trained alongside me. At the time, we were told they'd perished in the crash, shot down by enemy craft. I felt terrible that I hadn't been with Brendel, and the fact that Phasma was there with him instead, well, I felt like I had failed him somehow. I was terrified that I was being replaced. I guess I don't have anything to lose now, telling you that, do I? Vi shakes her head, and does her best to look empathetic, to draw the truth out of him with her silence. From what she's learned of the First Order, they aren't big on sharing weaknesses and talking about feelings. This is a tricky role, but one she is accustomed to playing.
With Brendel as her champion, she was welcomed into the First Order, he continues, looking off into the dead air of the small space. I trained her as he asked, and then they gave her a captain's cape of her own, and suddenly my own cape didn't mean as much. Brendel gave me this armor, and a year later she was wearing her chrome armor. I still don't know how or where she got it. Brendel claimed he didn't know, but he had that smile about him. She became their darling, their poster child, their legend. And even though I resented her, I believed it. That she was as great as they proclaimed her to be. But she was always so quiet, so enigmatic. And then I began doubting. And now here you come with this story. Is Siv really alive after that?
Vi smiles gently, the band across her forehead creaking as she inadvertently leans forward as if to... what? Conspire? Comfort? Siv lives, as does her child. The rest of them are gone.
But how?
Calliope Station was made to withstand anything, and it had already survived one radioactive event. She felt the hallway shake, but the Gand had told her to keep walking, so she got up and kept walking right into the medbay. The Skyre breeds tough people. Even on her own, Siv was determined to live and to raise her child. Vi grins, a real smile this time. Beautiful kid. Has Siv's skin and Torben's eyes. Can scream loud enough to stun a Wookiee. Anyway, Siv was smart enough to close the blast door, and the station got some new scars on its white walls. She's been through a lot. Still has lots of scars of her own. Not that there's anyone around to see them. Vi tries to lift her arm to scratch her nose, but it's just as pinned down as ever. She had forgotten, with the informality of their conversation, that she's still in the interrogation chair, the remote for which sits on the table like a forgotten Pazak deck, and one stacked against her.
But you saw her, Cardinal muses.
I scared the hell out of her. She hasn't been outside in 10 years. She's worried the radiation might harm Torby. Whatever caused the explosion, it turns out the rest of the station was running just fine, and the droids are more than happy to help her. Siv has a full complement of helpful servants and enough food to feed an army for a century. They've been there for 10 years without seeing a single soul. She was so glad to see me, her story practically fell out of her.
Then why do you look troubled on her behalf? It sounds as if you got what you went there for.
Now it's her turn to look away. I told Siv I'd come back. My Starhopper, well, I'm sure your troops have turned it into component parts by now. I couldn't fit 2 passengers on that thing, much less 3. So I promised Siv that I would come back and help her and her daughter rejoin civilization. I didn't tell... Cardinal perks up.
Tell whom?
Vi sighs. I didn't tell my superiors about that part. That poor woman will be listening for engines every day, waiting for a better life for her child than biding her time on a dead planet. I don't mind telling people they're screwed, but I hate giving anyone false hope. He's suddenly in her face, bawling his fist in her shirt.
Stop that. Your guilt is not my problem. We're running out of time. You said you had intel to help me take Phasma down, and you're still holding it back.
Iris beeps a warning, and Vi looks down at his hand and back up at his face. You can let go of me first. He releases her shirt and backs away sheepishly. Maybe he's not used to losing control like that. Iris floats back to bob between them, as if reminding Cardinal that he must keep his distance. This is the first interrogation where Vi hasn't taken a single punch, which says something else about her enemy. He might have shocked her a few times, but he's still ashamed for grabbing her like that, droid reprimand or no. That kind of touch, that kind of rage, is simply too personal. He's right, though. This thing she knows about Phasma? It's a doozy. She's been holding it back, but she feels it's finally time for the big reveal. He's as open as he's ever going to be, and if she continues to defy him, she'll lose him completely. She takes a deep breath and meets his eyes, commanding his full attention.
What did they tell you about Brendel's death? What's the official word?
He sits again, leans forward avidly like it's his favorite part of the story. But his eyes suggest it's going to be the worst part.
Unknown malady. I saw him that morning. He didn't look good. Like maybe he was coming down with something.
He was too pale.
I suggested he hit the med bay, have the droids check him out.
And what did Brendel say to that?
Cardinal's smile suggests he might have once been a mischievous boy.
He told me to mind my own business and respect my superiors.
But he went. He was like that. Followed good advice, but put you down so you didn't think it was your idea.
And then you never saw him again.
Cardinal doesn't answer, just stares at the floor.
Vi licks her lips. They're dry again.
Tell me then, Cardinal. That last morning, did he look a bit swollen?
Cardinal shrugs.
Sure, but he always looked a bit puffy after a night at the officer's mess. Wasn't the healthiest of men, and he was getting into his 60s then. I didn't expect him to look the picture of health.
But you never looked up his records?
Cardinal is up and pacing again, and Vi realizes that when it comes to Brendel Hux, he's a raw nerve, utterly unschooled in concealing his moods or his tells.
This is what he does when he's truly upset. He can't stop from moving, can't contain his nervous energy.
That's not how things are done in the First Order. I can't just go to records and ask for details, or to the med bay and have a private chat with the droids.
You can politely inquire of your superiors once, but ask a second time and they get suspicious. They called an assembly, and I was standing at the head of 10,000 troops in perfect formation when Armitage Hux put his hat under his arm and told us all that his father had passed on.
Didn't even tell you privately.
Huh.
Vi tries not to look too smug.
And you didn't ask for details. They really do have you trained well.
Cardinal grabs the manacles around her upper arms and shakes the whole contraption, rattling Vi's skull and turning her legs into jelly.
Of course I asked for details. An unknown malady, that's all they would say.
He pulls away and clears his throat. Must have been something he picked up on one of his planetary visits. The med droids had never seen anything like it, had no records of similar symptoms in their data drives. A complete mystery.
Just be glad I hadn't gotten it too, they said.
Well, I guess our slicers are better at solving mysteries than yours are, because they managed to get a hold of an old medical droid and unscramble its data. Let me tell you the symptoms that led to Brendel Hux's demise. First, he complained of a tiny bump on his neck, just under his collar, the skin red and hot and hard. Thought it might be a cyst or possibly a bite from some strange and unfamiliar creature. The med droids couldn't find anything unusual. Then Brendel started to puff up. His skin became swollen, his eyes began to bulge, and his hair fell out, and his fingernails popped off. He complained that he felt disoriented and weak. His skin became pale and thin and translucent, and then, floating in a Bacta tank in the med bay,
no!
He just sort of dissolved into the liquid, leaving behind only a few shrunken organs, bare bones, and a patch of graying red hair.
So you're saying that Phasma brought one of those beetles from Parnassus? That she what? Planted it on Brendel?
Vi raises an eyebrow and desperately wishes she could cock her head at him. She hates when smart people play dumb.
Unless you know another way that people casually turn into big bags full of water and explode.
But this is Captain Phasma we're talking about.
Why would she kill General Hux? He was her savior, her superior. He made her what she was.
Vi shakes and slams within her restraints, wishing she could get out and rough this idiot up a little for being so naive.
Why? Because as far as she knew, Siv was dead, and Brendel was the last person who knew about her humble beginnings. The last one who knew her history.
Brendel watched her betray her leader, fight her people, murder her own brother in cold blood. Brendel was the only witness to her crimes, the only witness in the entire galaxy who knew that she wasn't the perfect soldier poster child for this lockstep hellscape you call the First Order. She needed him, though, for a while. Needed him to bring her back here to your floating paradise and tell everyone of her bravery, her strength, her resilience, her prowess. Needed him to think that he was her vaunted patron and mentor and that she was his simple weapon. Needed to use him like a whetstone as she rose through the ranks, just as he'd foretold. And then one day, when he'd forgotten she wasn't merely a leashed wolf, she flicked that beetle into his jacket and walked away. The perfect crime. He's somewhere behind her now. Maybe he's leaning against the wall. Maybe he's in a ball on the floor. She doesn't know. She wishes she could see his face, see how he's taking it. See if he's thinking about picking up the remote again. For all that he's shown some rudimentary kindness, giving her water and food, and for all that the vitamin packs and stims helped a little, she can feel the damage in her body. Nerves burnt and muscles unable to loosen up. When he lets her out, if he lives up to their bargain and lets her out, she may very well fall flat on her face, unable even to crawl away. And that's the best-case scenario. For all she knows, he could still just shock her to death and be done with it. Because the truth of it is this. There is no physical evidence. That beetle is long gone. Phasma made sure of that. But what about Frey? She was a witness, too. She died 6 months ago in a training exercise. Weapon malfunction. Or at least that's how Phasma recorded it. Phasma is very good at getting rid of witnesses. For several long moments, he was silent. Does Armitage know? About Brendel? It comes out in a flat voice from somewhere behind her. I don't know what Armitage knows. I just know what was stricken from the original medbay records, which is a list of symptoms leading up to his death in the Bacta tank. As you know, the official cause of death was recorded as malady unknown.
And you're sure?
I'm strapped into an interrogation chair with an angry man. This is as sure as I get.
I'm sorry about this.
Vi tries to whip her head around, but can't. Sorry about what? You don't need to do anything you'll be sorry for. The next thing she knows, electricity is coursing through her body, slamming her teeth together and making bright red starbursts behind her eyelids. Vi Moretti goes unconscious. 32. On the Absolution. As soon as the spy goes limp in her bonds, Cardinal releases the switch. He knows what he has to do now, and ironic as it is, he'd rather not have a witness for this next step. He's worn ruts in this room, pacing and sitting and glaring at the walls as Vi has told her story. He demanded she tell him everything, and she certainly did. And it almost seemed like she enjoyed it. It's strange how obsessed a man can get with listening to dark truths about his enemies. Before, he knew nothing about Phasma. Now, he knows everything. Or at least enough. Although Iris beeps at him in irritation for doubting her surveillance, he checks Vi's vitals to make sure he didn't hurt her too much, and tests that her bonds are still tight before putting his helmet back on. It's become a part of him, an extension of his body like his blaster. The way it dulls some senses while expanding others soothes him. When Cardinal wears this helmet, he knows exactly who he is and what he was meant to do. So that's at least one thing he has in common with Phasma. And right now, he has to find Armitage Hux. There are still several hours before the meeting, which means the General is most likely commandeering his father's old quarters on the Absolution, brushing up on his intel and studying the agenda.
Stay here and watch her,
he tells Iris, and the red light blinks as if to say, I know. Locking the door as he leaves, Cardinal storms through the hallways, his captain's cloak flying behind him. The turbo lift takes forever, even though he stabs the button repeatedly.
General Hux's old quarters are high up among the senior staff, and the journey has always felt long, even on the best of days, when Brendel lived here and Cardinal felt welcome. When the lift door slides open on the officer's floor, Cardinal's heart is hammering so hard that he can feel it in his temples. He's slightly dizzy, as jacked up as he used to get as a kid recruit in a sim fight, when every nerve in his body was firing and his teeth refused to unclench. For all that he's accustomed to sparring one-on-one, it's been years since he did his required tours planetside, helping to pacify rebellious worlds and leading his troops on missions. Those first few years after Brendel delivered him from Jakku were tough, as his body and mind hardened to focus on combat. But this will be a new kind of fight. Cardinal has never before been a man to question his superiors, and he's never been the bearer of bad news. Then again, he's never illegally detained a suspect and tortured them for hours in a hidden room in the bilge to gain secret intel on a colleague either. When he reaches Brendel's old suite, a protocol droid answers the door, placid and refined. This model once belonged to Brendel, and Cardinal wonders if its memory was wiped after the older man died. Or perhaps it contains all sorts of secrets, including the ones Cardinal has recently learned. The way the First Order uses and wipes and reuses droids, and sometimes loses them, there's a good chance this very model stood on that shuttle with Phasma, silently recording. Perhaps it was there the day Phasma released a golden beetle, unleashing her long-kept secret weapon on a high-ranking superior officer who had made the foolish decision to trust her.
Can I help you, Captain Cardinal?
The droid asks.
I need to see General Hux, please.
The helmet keeps his voice from trembling like a boy's, and he puts his hands behind his back like he's at parade rest to hide their shaking.
I'm afraid the General is resting before the assembly.
It's an emergency.
Oh, I see. How very unusual.
I'm afraid it is. Very unusual. But of utmost importance.
The droid is still standing there looking befuddled when Armitage himself appears behind it. He's not in his crisp uniform, but instead wears a robe, black and composed of sharp lines and pleats. For all that the entire point of a robe is to appear casual and comfortable, Armitage Hux has a way of turning anything into a uniform, any interaction into a judgment.
How very unusual indeed, he says. What is this emergency, Captain?
In the lines of Armitage's face, Cardinal sees what Brendel once was before he grew old and soft. Confidence, vitality, sureness. And yet there's something cruel and savage in the man, something forged by Brendel himself. Cardinal remembers hating Armitage when he first met him on Jakku. Spoiled, sullen, small, rat-like, soft while the orphan children were hard and sharp. But over the years, Cardinal was, well, not programmed, taught, sculpted. He learned that Armitage was untouchable, above him. Armitage is clever and wise and farsighted. Armitage will help the First Order eclipse the might of the old Empire and annihilate the New Republic. Cardinal was loyal to Brendel, and now he is loyal to Armitage. And Armitage appreciates that. Of course, Armitage has always favored Phasma. They both reside on the Finalizer, and Cardinal has often seen them colluding. Together, they manage and control thousands of stormtroopers, planning invasions and attacks with Kylo Ren to lead the First Order to victory. In times of doubt, Cardinal wonders if Armitage supports Phasma out of spite for the Jakku orphan Brendel once took under his wing. Even if Armitage doesn't like Cardinal, he has long acknowledged the superiority of Cardinal's training methods and lauded his success with young recruits. Perhaps the sneer Armitage wears every time he speaks to Cardinal is the same expression he shows everyone. Such petty concerns don't matter now. This is not an issue of personal politics. Since Armitage cares about the First Order as much as Cardinal does, he'll appreciate learning what Cardinal knows. Loyalty to the cause is more important than interpersonal rapport. Together, they can oust Phasma and rebuild the training program to the younger Hux's exact specifications.
Once Armitage understands how his father died, there's no way he'll let Brendel's murderer stay on those posters, much less remain alive.
Well? Armitage prods.
I have new information, sir.
Spit it out! I haven't got all day, as you well know.
Cardinal draws a deep breath and holds himself up tall.
Sir, I've gained some intel you'll want to hear. About your father. About his death.
Armitage almost looks surprised, but he's too well-bred for that.